The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Somebody else has texted, teachers are advised to use Comic Sans, much simpler for students. So there. Now, every Friday we invite somebody in and ask them to guide us through the soundtrack to their lives. Today's the turn of actor Victoria Smurfit. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Now, you're home because tomorrow you're in the Radisson Blue Hotel, Golden Lane, Dublin 8, and you're speaking at the Fighting Blindness Retina 2019 public engagement.
Yes, for Science Week.
Meeting, yes. Retina.ie for more information, because, of course, Evie has a condition called Stargardt's macular dystrophy, your daughter.
Trips off the tongue, doesn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it does, yes. And I saw you on the Late Late Show and you've been fundraising.
We have. It's sort of a double-edged sword in terms of it's been an incredible opportunity to be able to sort of get behind fighting blindness. But also selfishly, it's fantastic for Evie because instead of being under the sort of the quagmire of why me, how unfair, she gets to be empowered and she gets to think about, well, the kids younger than her and people around her that can have somebody to ask questions of or just not feel alone, you know. And that's been, she's been an absolute trooper about that. She's
great. And you've raised a lot of money and you're making a presentation over the weekend as well, are you?
Yeah, now don't tell Evie.
Right.
Don't say a word, but on the QT, she's getting the Empowerment Award for the year.
Right.
I was told that the Fighting Blindness Board had a unanimous decision that she would get it this year.
Brilliant.
So she's getting...
Brilliant.
She's receiving
it tomorrow. We might talk to Evie before 4
don't
o'clock.
Don't tell her, Ray.
Right, don't tell her. Now, I saw a picture of you yesterday in the paper, yourself, Don Witcherly, and the late Neil Tobin from Ballycus Angel days.
Yeah, way back when. He was. It was funny, you'd be sitting in the makeup truck and they say, oh, yeah, who are you working with? Oh, I'm heading in with Neil Tobin now. And they'd be like, oh, good luck. I'm like, what do you mean, good luck? Oh, good luck. No, hang on. So I was expecting someone very scary. And to be fair to Neil on set, he would definitely try and be scary, but I found him just so entertaining and so fun. And the scarier he got, you could just see this glint, this twinkle, this sort of mischievous, oh, I'm going to mess with this young one. And and I just found it really, I adored him for it, you know.
Yeah.
Keep you on your toes.
He was such a talent because he could do it all. His comic timing was obviously brilliant. So he could do that side of it. Then he was a stand-up and then he was a serious actor as well.
And he could flick-flack within a sentence. That's what was so amazing. Like he could present as the big scary talent in his priest outfit in the wind and the wet outside the church in Ballycus Angel, and then suddenly just something would flash across his face and you'd be in stitches.
Yeah,
he was a devil for the corpsing or creating corpsing for you.
May he rest in peace.
Absolutely.
Now you're here to go through the soundtrack to your life. It'll be a sort of a bit of a sprint here.
I'm very young, right?
Yes, that's what I was just going to say. You were born to Dermot and Caroline Smurfit, March 31st, in an unspecified year.
Yeah, you can divvle off.
Right, okay. Who else was in the family?
My brother Dermot. We grew up together and he is younger than me, but older than me. We always say Dermot was born around 40, so he's now sort of coming to the right age.
So old head on young shoulders.
Yeah, yeah, he's the grown-up.
So by contrast then, you are not an old head on young shoulders.
No, I'm constantly like, oh, nice rock. Oh, nice rock. I get very excited about the smallest things.
Yeah,
Dermot's a much more kind of scene.
And was that right from the start?
Always.
Yeah.
Always very serious.
But you, we want to talk with you now, not Dermot.
Sorry.
Yeah, you were always flighty, were you?
Well, no. I was a very shy, serious child that took everything extremely seriously, including things like, how could I possibly steal all the after-eights from my parents' dinner party without them knowing? But I would take it on as a very serious job.
You were posh now, after-eights at the dinner party.
Listen, what about me suggests that I'm not posh, darling. So, yeah, no. Oh, yeah, we were very, very fancy. And I still buy them now because they make me very happy.
Yes, and brings you right back.
Right back. I know, it's only really sad when I'm taking them from the table from underneath the table still at my unspecified
age. yeah. And so 2E, And I was going to say back then, I have to be very careful.
You're within striking distance, Darcy.
I'm older than you. I am older than you. Anyway, but big families were quite common.
Yes.
Then, and there was only two EE.
Yes.
Yeah. So did you realise that you're a relatively small family?
Not really. Not really, because the house was always pretty full. But I mean, Dad did address that balance, and he now one of seven. So it might have taken two wives, but right. We have a proper Irish family.
So what was your first memory? It doesn't have to be an audio one. Now, what was your first memory?
I remember, it kind of is audio, I suppose. Yeah. I remember being told, Mum telling me that if I didn't go to sleep, that Charlie the ghost would come and get us. And it was a big old rattly house, and you'd be in the top bedroom. And I'm pretty sure, now I'm a parent, I realise she was outside the door. She'd say, now, if you're not asleep by the time Charlie starts rattling his chains now, that's a big problem. You have to go to sleep straight away. I'm like, okay. And I remember, she must have been outside the door just gently rattling the toilet.
See, that would have kept me awake.
Oh, no, instantly I was asleep. Yeah. I'm like, where are you? I'm not looking. No, sleep. Yeah, Charlie the ghost.
Yeah,
so that's some child abuse there, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure I can have her up for that now.
I wouldn't say you'd find that in any parenting book.
No. Which makes it so brilliant. She is brilliant.
We've a collection of sounds. A lot of them are TV sounds. So see if you can beat the intro on these TV themes.
Oh, dear.
We'll go with this one here.
Oh, I do know it.
Yeah. Go on.
I can do the gestures, but... Ah, names! Help me out.
Go on.
No.
Mr.
Mr. Ben.
Yes, Mr.
That
Ben.
That is Mr. Ben in my head. I'm in a suit of armour, and I'm galloping. Yes. I always wanted to be him.
Because Mr. Ben was like, he was normal enough, black suit, bowler hat, and then he'd go into a fancy dress shop, and
yes.
He'd put on something, and then he'd go out the magic door, and
yeah.
Whatever his costume... whatever world that was, he became into that world. Yeah,
that was my it was my favorite thing growing up, which is why my brain is so sad because I couldn't remember. But to me, the bowler hat and the suit is the not normal world, and in the fancy
yes,
dress shop,
well, that's
is
where your world has become.
World.
Yes,
yeah,
yes,
yeah. Growing up, you know, I wanted to be an ice skater and a hairdresser, and I wanted to drive a taxi, and I wanted to be a lawyer and a judge, and then I wanted to be Mr. Ben and Laura Ingalls, and I thought, oh, eventually someone said, that probably means you want to be an actor because you want to be
yes.
everybody.
And you were saying to Neil that it took you a while to realise that acting was a job.
I had no clue. It just looked like fun. And it was. You basically get paid for the jobs you don't get and the rejections you get.
Oh, I see. I see.
Yeah, if you really love it, you'd do it for free. I will not do it for free, just so we make that clear. But
yes.
But you know, that's the way you think of it, as you do the...
Because all those times, all that rejection and horribleness and waiting by the phone, that's what you're
But
really
I used to go around the back of the telly when I was little. I remember, great big, the big old TV.
No. Remember, you'd after eight.
Damn it. But I'd go around the back of the TV to see where Laura Ingalls was running from, because
right.
she's obviously coming down this hill.
Yeah, over the crest of
but
the hill,
the hill
yes.
must be behind the telly.
Very good.
Not very clever.
Cue theme tune.
Oh, what
that's
floor?
Not it there, it's there.
Oh, that's it. Here she comes.
Yeah, little house on the prairie. Little house on the prairie there.
Here she comes.
Yeah, and it was more innocent times, wasn't it, Victoria?
Absolutely. I mean, I grew up on a TV diet of Little House on the Prairie, and then when Dad came home, Star Trek and Benny Hill. So I'm confused, I think is fair. But it was, even Benny Hill was an innocent time in comparison to what you see on YouTube.
And it sounds like you had a happy childhood.
Oh, very happy.
Yeah.
You know, gallivanting around the place. You had an awful lot more freedom, I think, then as well. It was like, go out and come back when you're hungry.
Yes.
In a way that, you know, you can't really do that so much now.
No.
I mean,
so when you were hitting teenage years,
what
sort of person were you?
Very intense.
Were you?
Oh, I was very intense. A lot of emotions. A lot of emotions. Very, very intense. Huge amounts of ginger hair and spots. And always plugged into my Walkman in my roller skates that you strap to your trainers, up and down, listening to Spandau Ballet or Tears for Fears, or, you know, and emoting while I did it. I mean, emoting.
We were fine to acting on your best behavior.
So what age were you about when you were listening to that?
Cry because no one understands me. That's what I think every time I hear that song.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's sad, but true.
What age were you about then?
I'm not telling you.
I'm just going to do the math. I'm going to do the maths. No. Yeah, that was from 1985. And of course, another version of that. Remember, Everybody Wants to Run the World.
Yes.
Yes, for some sporting event, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you were sort of intense and moody as a teenager.
Yes.
And the acting was still there, bubbling under, was it?
I guess so. According to my mother, yes. And my grandmother, yes.
And was it because that can be sort of a nearly a derogatory term. She's a bit of an actress.
100%.
Yes.
Get on the stage. Yeah, Noah, 100%.
Drama queen, melodramatic.
Yes, exactly.
Were they all
adjectives? But you get it as a grown-up. As a grown-up, you get people, well, how do I know you're telling me the truth? Because you're an actress. Like, unless you're actually paying me money, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm really not going to judge.
That's fascinating. I've never heard anybody say that before.
Or you'd be at a dinner party and people go, oh, be angry. No, 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 cry. I'm like, unless there's cash on the table, Sonny, no.
Because there's that Netflix thing now with Michael Douglas. What's it called?
Oh, Kominsky Method. It's so good.
And there's a scene where he's meeting this girl for the first date.
Which one? In the second season?
Can't remember. Anyway, she acts out a whole thing.
Oh, yes.
And he says, all right. And he falls for it. And he says, oh, you're good, you're good.
Yeah. So you get
so that begs the question of you, Victoria Smurfit. Have you ever used your acting ability outside of a stage or screen setting?
Maybe.
Yeah, I'd say you have.
Only once. I was driving too fast. I was at drama school in Bristol Old Vic and I was driving too fast home to see my mother. And the cops, the police might have stopped me. This was before I ended up playing one of them. and so I concocted a great big story, burst into floods of tears, like proper racking sobs. And he was a young cop and panicked and was super British enough to be too embarrassed about the tears, and off I went.
Yes.
Other than that, no.
You bold thing, you. Yeah.
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Right.
Really sorry.
You're sorry. So teenage years then, you went from Ireland to England when you were 14.
Yes.
That must have been a big wrench, was it?
It was because, you know, you sort of, you don't think of it because it's English speaking and, you know, you don't think of it as a big culture shock. But, you know, suddenly I'm in, you know, school in Ascot and everyone's called Camilla and Lucinda. That's so nice. Oh, my God, you're Irish. That's so fun. So do you have, like, electricity, like, all the time there in Ireland? You know, I mean, this is a while back.
Yes.
And so it was a complete, you know, no. It's not a bath. It's a bath. It's a bath. Yeah. It's in a bath. You know, so.
Yes. So you were an oddity.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. I learned to be less intense there because you kind of learn to just jump around the different groups to be able to make friends rather than just being intense.
Because it could have gone the other way, couldn't it? Because here you are in a foreign, it is a foreign country, although they speak the same language, and now you've been treated as an oddity.
Yes.
And you're 14, which is a very awkward time anyway.
You're odd anyway.
Yes, yeah. But you managed it.
Kind of. I became a sort of a jack of all trades and the Egypt, I suppose. I probably played up to the stereotype they were hoping for.
Right. So the 80s again, because you're of an unspecific age, we don't know exactly what age you were.
104.
But Live Aid.
Yeah.
That struck a chord, would you? As it did with everybody, obviously.
I remember it really clearly. I've got a very clear mental picture of being in the house in Ireland and in Dorky, and this, you know, I was really lucky. I grew up by the sea, and so the sea was raging in the back. It was a grey, mucky day, and we were by the fire. And we were all by the fire watching Bob. He was, before he was Sir Bob, who lived down the road. Suddenly, you know, orchestrating this extraordinary day's event, and when you attach as a teenager, there's always some kind of event that happens in your life that is that first moment of empathy, and it was. Yeah, it was Ethiopia. It was that time, the famine. And then to see Bob from down the road doing such an incredible job to support it. I remember that really well.
So you sort of grew up nearly in a moment. You sort of...
Completely.
Yeah. And this is him, that famous clip of him asking people to give money to the less fortunate people in Ethiopia.
You know, you've got to get on the phone and take the money out of your pocket. Don't go to the pub tonight. Please stay in and give us the money. There are people dying now. So give me the money. And here's the numbers.
Let's read them out. We're probably going to get the address first, aren't we?
No, let's fuck the address. Let's get the numbers. Because that's how we're going to get it.
Yeah. He's still the same.
He's amazing. Not changed at all. Yeah.
Yeah. He looks great for his age. What age is he? No, I'm not hung up on age.
Not younger than I am.
Not younger than you are. Right, okay. So when did you consider then that acting was going to be your career choice?
It was at St. George's in school in the UK. The theatre studies A-level came in. And I started doing some bits and pieces because I was sort of scared of the showy musical stuff because I can't sing for toffee. You can pay me money not to sing. But so when it was sort of serious drama came in, it seemed like a place I could try. And it was the teacher there that said, oh, you should probably do this. And so just went to the drama schools, and I certainly was never going to be a mathematician. I'm not going to lie to you. So I went to the drama schools and got invited in.
And got work.
That's it, yeah.
And you've been working ever since.
Yeah, please God, touch wood.
Yeah. Now, you're around because of the Fighting Blindness meeting tomorrow in the Radisson Blue Hotel, Golden Lane, Dublin 8. And the reason you have an association with that is because your daughter, Evie. And we want to meet Evie.
So we'll
take a commercial break and we'll talk to Evie and you after this.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Anyway, there we are. Victoria Smurfit is still with us and Evie has just joined us.
Hi.
What age are you, Evie?
I'm 15.
Right, we were talking about you in your absence earlier on. Sorry about that, we shouldn't really have done it. and your mum was telling us that you suffer from Stargardt's macular dystrophy.
I do, yes.
Yes. So I saw you on the Late Late Show and it was a very powerful interview and you spoke very honestly about it. What was the reaction you got after that?
I got a lot of love from a lot of people around in Ireland from my school, and a lot of people who didn't understand originally what I was going through watched the video and kind of understood more. And I'm so grateful for the opportunity to be able to do that because there's so much more clarity now about my condition, and there's so much more, you know,
support.
Yeah, yeah, support and understanding.
And as your mum was saying, that to look at you, you've no idea that you're going blind.
Well, yeah, it's not something just like printed on my forehead.
No, I know.
I mean, sometimes I wish it was.
Yes. Why? Why do you wish that? Because people would understand more?
I feel like people would understand more, but then again, I'm a lot more than just a condition.
Of course you are. Yes. Yeah.
Well, sometimes it's hard because kids can be tough sometimes. Say, oh, you know, you said you couldn't see and yet you were able to see that, or how many fingers have I got?
Well, that's the thing, because I've spoken to a lot of people over the years and it's a bit like comparable to you, you know, act angry. When you say you're blind, people then want to
test it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's weird, isn't it?
It is odd.
It's so weird. But she has to spend a lot of time explaining to me what goes on, what she sees, because it's changing all the time and you can never know. Though I will tell you that she will categorically tell me she doesn't see any of the stuff she leaves on her bedroom floor, which I'm pretty sure is a lie.
I have done no such thing.
So you're going to be there tomorrow, Evie, as well.
Yes, I will be.
Yes, yeah. And you'll be there to answer questions about your condition. How common is it, do you know, or how?
Last I checked, it was 8 in 10,000 people have the gene that could lead to it or may pass it on.
All right, okay.
I'm not.
Yeah. So it's rare, it's rare.
It's very rare.
Yeah.
But a lot of people might have the gene and not know. Okay.
So. I have it. Her dad has it, obviously, and we hadn't a clue.
Yeah.
So it's sort of it's a 1 in 4 chance, really, of passing it on.
And when did you realise that Evie had it?
Well, it was actually the school in America said, we think she has ADHD. And I'm like, what? Well, she's not focusing. I'm like, well, I mean, Evie's always been pie in the sky with her airy fairy stuff. But, you know, you want to take it seriously. And we were back to the opticians over and over and over again in the US. And I'm saying, I'm spending so much money on glasses and yet she still can't see the board. I don't understand. And then it sort of all transpired. It unpicked from there.
Right.
Yeah. It was a difficult time. I was back in the classroom and I couldn't see the board. And from what people were telling me, like, they couldn't see the board either, but like they could still kind of understand what was happening, rather to me who didn't understand and couldn't see the board. But there was a reason behind that.
Yes.
And so I got very frustrated, because even when I was moved to like the front of the class and I was moved to every such position, it was just, I just couldn't see it. And I got very frustrated. And eventually I stopped trying, because I was like, well, I'm trying so hard, I'm stressing myself out, and it's not working. If I don't listen, then maybe there, if I like stop listening to what she's saying, then maybe there's like a reason to why I can't see or am not learning.
Isn't it great that there's so much audio out there now?
Incredible.
Yeah. And I was reading something recently that they've done research, and listening to a book and reading a book does exactly the same thing.
Really?
Like, there were snobs who were saying, you know, well, listening to a book isn't really like reading a book.
Yeah.
But it does exactly the same.
Yeah, well, it must do.
Triggers all the same things in your brain and same learning, images. all of that. Yeah, yeah. Are you a fan of audiobooks?
Well, I haven't listened to many audiobooks. It's kind of like a denial thing where I'm still holding on to that little bit of reading I have left.
Yes.
I will be starting audiobooks in the future, and I am going to have to learn to adjust, I suppose.
Yes, yes, yeah, yeah. I suppose life is a constant adjustment for you.
Oh, yeah. It's my eyesight. It deteriorates rapidly. So it's constantly going from one thing to the other. And some things I can't see, and then, well, can see, and the next day I can't see them. So it gets kind of frustrating. And, you know.
Your mum is great support for you.
Oh, yeah. She's my number one supporter. Oh. So is my dad and my siblings.
Yeah.
And, well, maybe not my siblings. Lee Flynn, if you are listening, just know this.
Well, we leave it there. Thanks so much for coming in. Evie, good luck tomorrow. Oh, Victoria, it's been a real pleasure talking to you both.
Oh, it's been
good luck tomorrow. Victoria and Evie Smurfit.